words. Mm-hmm. You've had words. Mm-hmm. She came up with something I just have to share.
Let's hear it.
Really quickly. We were on the, Mike and I were on the podcast MuggleCast, and I guess over the years we just referred to ourselves as the MuggleCasters.
Mm-hmm.
So I left my girlfriend to record this episode tonight of Game of Owns, and she said, say hi to the owners for me. And
owners.
I had to like double take, because she didn't capitalize it, which is the thing. It's like, I think if we were to adopt the name, we would capitalize it. I have serious shit with people who don't capitalize like the M and the N, especially the N in MuggleNet. But still, the owners, dude, how badass is that?
I mean, it's good. It's good. I like it. Much like Danny in today's episode, we also ride into a new and unknown location. And that is Wednesday with the two of us. Eric and I have decided to grace ourselves with each other's presence. Eric, I'm quite graced. Thank you for coming.
Oh, I'm graced as well. It's really amazing, Grace.
Yeah.
It's amazing to be graced by you, Zach.
It's amazing to be graced by. Does that make any sense?
I don't know.
False flattery is a theme in this chapter. I swear there was a point to it.
Well, I think that, you know, all things considered, I am glad that I'm podcasting with someone who doesn't knowingly have a foot fetish the way that Pyat Preacher does. That was in this chapter. Pyat Pri gives Danny a little kiss on her footsies.
He does.
That doesn't quite make sense because I'm sure she should have responded to him by like, I'm up here. They're having a conversation. He's looking down at her feet. I think it'd be weird that, or it was weird that he just kind of did that. But whatever, man. Whatever.
I would have been like, is it blue? I would have asked.
Maybe she was on horseback or something. And so that was why he had to kiss her feet because it was closest. I don't know.
Well, it did happen. Pyat Pri, a.k.a., as we've come to know and love, Captain Creepy Face. Now,
I thought the woman was Captain Creepy Face. The secret woman with the ever since that episode, I think in the episode, which I believe we called Captain Creepy, maybe. Was it called Captain Creepy Face? Anyway, it was always ambiguous, I think, in the very first episode where you came up with a brilliant title, because I think they either introduced both characters in one, or at least the woman with like the mask, the golden Majora's mask on, came up to Danny in that episode, and then you said Captain Creepy Face, and I think you were referring to Pyat Pri, but I think it was always a little unclear.
It's so funny that you brought that up, because I always thought that you guys didn't quite like get who I was talking about at the moment, and that the listeners might not have either. So I never really, you know what I mean? Like, I just never approached the problem ever. I was like, Captain Creepy Face, they like it. It can be whoever they want.
How many people with creepy faces can there be? But it is the big wide world, and I'm sure Danny's just thrilled to see any faces
point. It's so funny.
Well, look, Captain Creepy Faces. It's just like, if you can be a captain of something, why not it be, you know, having a creepy face?
Well, the best part about that entire situation is the person I was actually speaking about, you're right, was Quaithe, who is in this chapter as the mysterious shadow lady.
She is Captain Creepy Face.
Yeah, I mean, because you couldn't see her face, and she's a beautiful actress in real life, you know, and she hides behind that mask, and she's mysterious, and who knows, we may find out more about her later. In this chapter, on the other hand, she is just as mysterious as she is in the television show, except, you know, we've already come to learn this, being this far into A Clash of Kings, that we meet Pyat Pri, we meet Zara, we meet some of the 13 early on when they come and they find her. But now she is actually being brought to the Gates of Karth. And this is the interaction that we saw in the TV show. And oh my God, the difference between what we read and what we're talking about now versus what we saw is staggeringly, staggeringly different. I feel like we have been so much cheated out of the grandeur of what Karth could have been on camera.
Oh, really?
I mean, yeah. I mean, the walls of Karth, all right?
Especially the inner wall.
Yes.
I'm surprised they shied away from that on television.
Well, you're right.
You can stab Robb Stark's wife in the baby womb several times, but you can't have an inner wall featuring people fornicating with one another.
That would be too much.
What are you going to do, right? But they did change it quite a bit, this whole scene from, because she's not, of course, like stranded on her last livable leg, and Zaro doesn't have to come out and like vouch for her.
Yeah, he doesn't invoke Sumai and cut his hand and look all gallant.
Yeah, people really like her, I guess, in the books, which is a little odd, but you know, I'm going with it.
I mean, it's definitely strange. In the show, we get to see Dany sort of be haughty. She's saying, I don't need to show you the dragons. I am Daenerys. My words should be enough. But in this case, there's no need for this entire exchange. Like, we don't need this character moment for Dany because she's already shown the dragons to these people. She's already in Carth. She's being taken to Carth. She's looking at the gates. And then when she eventually gets inside of Carth, you know, Drogon is riding on her shoulder. She's got her dragons with her. She's not hiding them.
One of the things that I like about Carth, too, is the manner of dress. I have to say that I think I like the fashions. We're obviously in a pretty in like the fashion capital of the East here. It's all very I don't say missing, but it's limited. You know, it's hot out and they just wear. Well, apparently somehow the men are keeping away from the sun and everybody's got this really, really pale skin. Except, of course, for some of the people we meet in this chapter. But
it's kind of mysterious.
Yeah, they're called the Milkmen.
Quaithe is Daenerys from the future.
Oh, come on. That can't be possible, can it?
I mean, who knows, dude? There's dragons.
No.
You ever seen a dragon?
No, dude. That's the reason that doesn't work is because I think if Dany were in any position to be alive and had any insight in it, like from the future insight, she wouldn't be spending it in Carth. Come on, man. She would still be trying to, she would take what she knows of the Seven Kingdoms from her attempts at sacking it and go back in time and actually sack it.
And by all of that, you mean she would go drink with Robert and hang out and chill because he had
Yeah. And then she could totally preempt Cersei and become his wife. How crazy would that be, dude, if Robert Baratheon's child was actually a Targaryen?
It could be.
That would be crazy. It would bring it right back into the natural line of succession. Of course, we're getting slightly off topic, but I like where this is going. Well, what do you think about Jorah here? Because Jorah's kind of, his role in this chapter is also quite different from in the TV series. And Dany is pretty much developing feelings for him, I think. She's really concerned with how he feels about her.
Right. Well, I mean, definitely in the book, this is only our second chapter, so it's been a long time since we've read Daenerys. I mean, since we did the first book.
Yeah.
I think the way she sees Jorah is she understands, like she says in this chapter, I've crossed the Red Waste. I have birthed the sun-ish. I've birthed dragons-ish. You know, I've done all these great things. And she's saying, I've grown much older than my years, essentially, is what she's saying. She's like, I'm 15. I get it. I like how she says that. She's like, I get it. I'm 15, essentially. But I'm older than this. And all of that being said, I feel like she is smart enough and wise enough to kind of register the situation and understand the kinds of advances that Jorah's making. And with them not being as, I don't really know how to describe it in a nice way. They're not as aggressive as they could be. We could say that.
That's true.
So yeah. She's like, I feel like she's much more understanding about the situation because she does recognize the class that Jorah exhibits. She understands that he is trying to be honorable and keep it just business. And he will. He won't cross the line until she does. Or if she does, you know what I mean?
I think that's true. But she is also kind of worried. She says, or she asks herself, does he really think of me as his queen? Though, and I don't know what that meant. I wonder if it means, like, does he respect her or is he always trying to teach or protect? There's never like that. You know, I think all that comes later, though, especially in the TV series. Once she starts really throwing her, you know, political power around.
Right.
Then he really, I think, really, like, he's already sworn loyalty to her. Okay, that's super important. Nobody's trying to diminish that. But I think he really, really gets behind her a little later on once she really starts kicking ass. I think it's interesting that, I mean, he kind of doesn't want to leave Dany, but she sends him on a mission within this chapter. Glad we heard back from him in this chapter. Obviously, a very important part of the chapter is when he comes back. But, you know, he didn't want to leave at first, and it was weird. But she was just like, dude, you're like the most qualified person for this job.
I mean, it's true.
Languages. And then I didn't know, but I was wondering, because I think this is the first time we see Dany speaking Valyrian.
It was a surprise because I expected it to be the same kind of reveal that was in the show, you know?
Yeah, exactly, with the the unsavory slave trader gentleman.
Right.
But in this case, it's just the ship captain whom Jorah finds, comes back. Obviously, she gets some really, really important news. And I liked how it was described as being a gift because they are, even though they're in the Free Cities and they're in Carth and this is the first actual establishment she maybe has seen since leaving Illyria. I mean, if you really think back, she's been intense a lot, you know, in deserted cities, you know what I'm saying? This is a huge center of commerce that she's in now. the gift of news, of something as powerful as knowledge, or as easy to come by as knowledge. But in those parts, it's quite scarce. The fact that Robert Baratheon has died. And this is a weight that nobody could have lifted, you know, from her, or could have expected how much of a weight was lifted upon that news. Apparently, she's been dreaming about Robert Baratheon. He's been, I think, as described as a giant shadow, you know, in her life, hanging over the idea that she may have to one day come foot to foot with this guy who loves war above anything else, except maybe drinking.
And it's so interesting to get this look at Robert from Dany, because her perspective is of a person that's never met the jolly Robert Baratheon, or his friend Ned, who's quiet yet cool and subtle. She's never met these guys. So, you know, in our minds, we're like, Dany, please stop describing him before I stop liking you. And then on the other hand, it's like, well, I understand this completely, because, I mean, she's walking through Carth. We're seeing a beautiful, majestic city full of people that are dressed so magnificently that she considers all of them lords. We're talking about a place that has never been described in this book series so far. We're talking about a place that they consider the greatest city that ever is or ever was. A place that apparently is the center of what should be considered the world. All of that being said, she's in a place this rich. She's in a place that is this exotic to her. Yet she's still getting fawned over. We've got Zorro. We've got Piapri. We've got these people that are offering her, well, come hang out in my Tower of Dust, or come hang out with me in my Palace of Lust.
My Tower of Dust.
I mean, there's all of these things that's getting thrown at her. And this has been happening since an early age. So when someone comes and brings her the news of the person that put her in this position, that even put her here at all, you can imagine the mindset that she's in and the kind of things that she's worrying about in her mind and the plans that she's sort of half-assed creating quickly on the spot. And this is why she tells the dude, she's like, hey, listen, if you ever come by King's Landing later and I'm queen, stop by, you'll get a nice present again. And you know he will.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't wait for that to be like the ending scene in the books. He'll just be like, hey, what's up? She'll be like, okay, got your land. You can have all
Harrenhal,
of
take it.
Yeah, take it. It is a blessing and a curse.
Yes. The last owner didn't have it for that long.
Can Harrenhal, though, get any more melted than it already is? That is a question. Why did it stop where it did in terms of the melting? And won't more places, if Daenerys is truly queen, won't more places look just like or worse than Harrenhal?
No, that is a good question, yeah.
It could be prime real estate, man. Yeah. It could be like the, maybe it's just as melted, but not as, you know, hot to the touch by the time that all happens. But I don't know. The interesting thing, and I think that even though she is being coddled, which is kind of a stark contrast to the desperation they showed,
right,
you know, in the show, she still has her at least a portion of her wits about her. She's very observant, and she doesn't trust Shadowbinders. And this is something that comes into play kind of just for the first time, because again, it has only been two Dany chapters, including this one, since, you know, the fate of Khal Drogo at the end of the last book. Basically, due to the association of Dany and Miri Mazdur, any Shadowbinder that wants to seek her favor really needs to work hard at it. So that's why she already has doubts about Quaithe when Quaithe first comes up to her outside the gate. So she has to kind of earn Dany's trust. And I think one of the ways she does this is by coming up to Dany. And instead of saying, you know, welcome, this, that, the other thing, like everybody else does, she warns her. She actually issues a kind of a cryptic warning for Dany.
In a situation where so many people are falling at your feet, and in some cases kissing said feet, a person walking up to you and being the separationist from all of them is going to catch your attention. And it doesn't hurt when that person has a mask over his or her face. That always kind of advances the importantness of the situation. But I think that it is sound advice, and so does Jorah. Even in his beautiful, beautiful Westerosian armor, his advice is not taken lightly.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that this chapter didn't illustrate that I was kind of expecting it to was the vulnerability of the dragons, because they are in a position almost ripe for the taking at this point. They're not, you know, fully grown. We know this from the show. They do get taken eventually, and I'd be really concerned if that doesn't happen in the book. But still, like, right now on this chapter, they're kind of just, you know, flying or kind of scattering around the floor, skimpering, this, that, the other thing, climbing up on her. But what Quaithe says is that, you know, people, when they see the dragons, they're going to lust for them. And it really kind of puts things into perspective here that, you know, and we see this with the ship captain too, where she says, oh, I should, you know, totally repay you for this knowledge and this gift, this incredible gift you've given me. And he's like, nope, I got to see you. I saw your dragons. That's cool. We're cool. You know, you don't owe me anything. Just the ability to look on dragons apparently holds such significance to, you know, not just this guy, surely everybody, because they're supposed to be gone.
I mean, I can only imagine the value that armies and leaders across this planet would give to these dragons. And we're talking about people that have chosen to live their lives in a place that's obsessed with wealth and material values and material goods. So if there was a place for Dany to go that had multiple threats and not just one leader, it would be the city that is focused on gold and has 13 separate leaders. Like, this yeah. technically is one of the places where if she played her cards correctly, if she played the game correctly, she could walk out of this city with the fleet. But if she doesn't, you know, there's a lot more chances of things to go wrong in this case for her, sadly.
You know, and I felt this chapter particularly ended, you know, in kind of a foreboding way, because her and Jorah were talking about how dragons, even dragons can die or be taken down. And there, you know, there was kind of a nod to Viserys, you know, who was killed. She references that. Drogo's dead. It's all kind of like, it's all about fallen warriors. And yet Dany's in a position where she's here, and for the first time in a little bit of a time, she's not dying, and is having an opportunity to build her army and become kind of her own warrior. But even she was like, yeah, the rightful heir was probably my brother. Things are a little weird now that he's dead. So it was kind of interesting to hear her talk about that.
Yeah, and we don't get enough Dany chapters, and I really think that I understand so much more why she was such an early fan favorite. I mean, even though the latter book readers understand the scale of what she eventually reaches to, but being 20 odd chapters into A Clash of Kings and only having two with Daenerys is, I mean, it really makes you kind of like, what is it called? Like, absence makes the heart grow fonder, essentially.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, I want to know more about Karth and what's happening here, and maybe read a little less about what's going on in Winterfell or Pike. You know what I mean? Some of the kind of slower things.
Yeah.
So it's a push and pull, and it's a toss-up. I mean, getting little nuggets like this inside of a book that's so much focused on what's happening in Westeros is really cool, much like as we saw it in the show. And obviously George is more comfortable putting in as little as he wants versus a TV show that needs a cut of these people, you know, got to keep them in a certain place as far as billing is concerned. So
yeah, for sure. Well, I got to say, it's definitely interesting then. And, you know, thinking about that too, that the show manages to balance or show so much of Daenerys.
Right. And that goes back to what we were saying about the gate. It all comes down to that. The way that the showrunners handled Karth, I mean, they essentially had to do it. Comparatively speaking to the book here, we've got, you know, lumps and lumps of content that are focused on different people, and you've got an entire TV show to write. So, I mean, I think they did a pretty outstanding job with it. Obviously, the same message was told in the end. You know, so as far as we know, so who knows? Yeah.
Oh no!
What is it?
Do you hear the oven alarm?
Oh my god! Literally, we will mint the person in bronze.
Do you hear this?
On the shores of Pike, and that, ladies and gentlemen, would be the annoying horn blower, aka the oven alarm next door to Eric Skull.
Oh, and that is time for owns.
Yes.
And let's try and move past the idea that I'm getting owned by this damn thing that's going, you know what? I'm going to be moving in a month, and there better not be an oven alarm where I'm moving to.
The chances are there will be.
There's, you know what they say, Zach, where there is an oven, there is an own. If the V were a W or an Owen, perhaps there's an Owen.
There
if
is
there
an
any
Owen.
Owens, if there are any Owens listening
Antler
to this episode, please write in to us. But Zach, what would you say is your own of this Daenerys 2 chapter?
What a conversational two-person episode we're having here, Eric. Does my own go to Kohoro Mo, Captain of the Cinnamon Wind? Ooh. Or does it go to Drogon for riding on Dany's shoulders throughout a crowded city? That's pretty cool that he got to do that. Does it go to Pyat Pree for having bluer lips than everyone else? Or does it go to Zorro for having the sweetest house in Karth? Yes, it does.
Oh.
Zorro's palace is bigger than Illyrio's palace, she says. It makes Illyrio's entire place look like a place where pigs sleep, like the pig hovel, like where you go quest in World of Warcraft and you hate it. That's what it looks like. Literally, Gargle's hovel. It looks just like that in the Twilight Highlands, and it sucks. Zorro has the biggest house. Her entire Khalasar is sleeping inside of it, including the horses. She gets to do this. Everyone listening, I want you to imagine, trust me for a moment. Just put your fate in my hands. Stop the car if you're driving. Don't do that. Imagine this. She goes out to bathe naked. But this is you. This isn't her. Get this out of your mind. She goes out to bathe in a pool. She gets an entire wing of Zorro's house. An entire wing. Yep.
You get a wing and you get
you
a
get
wing.
You get a wing. Everyone's flying. No. She goes out into the bathing pool in her wing of his palace. The bathing pool is so cool that there are fish that are small enough to like bite you and clean you, but not enough to piss you off or anything. So the own goes to Zorro for having that house. And another one to George for describing that house. I would like this house.
Yeah, that was. I bet there are other pools with more aggressive fish, depending on your taste. Well, I have to give mine also to an inanimate object. Mine goes to the inner wall of Karth, and this is really because okay, haha, it's funny. It's it's a reference to it's not a reference. It's explicit sexual content, but
pornography.
It's porn. It's porn. Okay, it's porn on the wall of Karth, but. The reason that I liked it is because it makes Dany blush. And Dany's, a badass, okay? She's ready to talk about the complete annihilation of all of the opposition she's going to face in the upcoming battle between her and all seven kingdoms of Westeros, okay? But she sees this wall and she's like, and how bad could it be, okay? She sees this wall and she blushes. So I have to give it to the wall of Karth, the inner wall too. Because it just kind of, I don't know, I like it, and it makes her blush, and she's a badass, and it catches her by surprise. So,
congrats to the inner wall, I guess. I mean, the walls of Karth itself, with their three-layer design, are much like an onion, but yet more beautiful than a cake.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I just think, now I'm thinking of onion cake.
Mmm, that sounds horrible.
It can't be good.
Actually, you know what? It sounds pretty damn good, I'm not going to lie. Well, you see, folks, Eric and I, we make episodes together. It's late at night. Lots of things are happening. This is a podcast that, if you're just joining us for the first time, is usually four strong. But, the weeks continue, the days continue, and this is Wednesday. So Hub Day couldn't be complete without an episode, right?
No, it couldn't be. And in fact, there were even camels happened. Camels happened.
Last but not least, Owen-wise, this is an honorable mention, Owen, for Mr. Micah Tannenbaum, who cannot be with us this evening. An army, aka a camelry that they used in the book. a column of a camelry came out of Karth.
How many other C words can we use? Camelry, kind of like a cavalry, but it's like camels with jousting equipment and stuff. It's
with camelry, much everybody. More efficient hydration schedules. Camelry.
Oh gosh, yeah.
So no, we're saving all camel conversation until Micah returns. This is one of those chapters you guys have to read. And this is one of those episodes where we have decided to save owns. We've decided to save tweets. We've decided to take Facebook scrawlings, as we like to call them. And we're going to save that until Friday happens. We can wish you off into the weekend with kind, gracious, glorious words, including the ones that you reserved for this episode that are probably including lots of camels.
You just gave me, or because of what you said, I was inspired to come up with a slogan, which we then can spout on Friday. How do you like this for size? Scrawl on our wall.
I like that.
You like it, right?
Yeah, no,
right?
It's good. Yeah, it's good.
Scrawl on our wall. Cause I feel like, we do promote our Twitter, which is twitter.com/GameOfOwns. We do promote our email quite a bit, contact@GameOfOwns.com. We always say, oh yeah, and Facebook. But really, I feel like if we had a slogan, it would draw more attention to our Facebook. So let's see how many new likes we can get on Facebook. Like us at facebook.com/GameOfOwns. And while you're there liking us, scrawl on our wall.
Please, scrawl with any writing utensil you have or anything that can make patterns.
Yes.
Also, just in case you guys are making plans for Friday, don't. because we have lots of really great content coming out of our show podcast thing that you're listening to in the form of exclusive, incredible,
exclusive,
meaning exclusive. The Wick team was in effect at TitanCon this past weekend alongside all of the incredible Game of Thrones costumes. Some of you guys might even be listening. We have a lot of audio and fun stuff from that event, which we will share with you all on Friday.
You know, you just mentioned Titans. Speaking of Titans, we also will be delving into Bran's chapter.
The Titan!
If he's not a Titan, he could warg into one. We'll find out more on Friday's episode. Until then, stay gooey. I'm Eric Skull.
And I am Zach Louie. Very poetic.
Stay gooey, my friends.
Remember, let the goo be with you. Always.
I think there's a song by Regina Spektor called Blue Lips. I think we gotta probably give that one an own. It's obligatory because, of course, Pyat Pree has blue lips. All that nightshade. That was explained in this chapter. Kind of off, you know, it's offhanded or whatever. I think Zaro says it. You know, it was such a mystery for me in the series. I remember asking, you know, why does he have blue lips?
I mean, it makes sense, right? Because it kind of tricks you into thinking that there's something going on you don't quite understand.
Right. Well, it's just basically like he had, what was it? Remember fruit by the foot? And like when you'd eat fruit by the foot, your tongue would go like blue or purple afterwards.
Or more
it's
red.
It's like that. Except shade of the moon or nightshade or whatever you want to call it. It's referred to as different things in this book. It just kind of has that same Kool-Aid effect.
I like the Kool-Aid effect. And just in case you remember... All right.